Okay, we have the second morning lecture, October 25th, 1955, 4th London ACC. We have, probably from your viewpoint, been dodging around this whole idea of processing. You know? It's obvious that in the last three lectures I've given you that we just were dodging around, you know. Avoiding the whole issue. I keep telling you I'm talking about engrams, then we don't talk about engrams. Keeping you on suspense. That's a mechanism which one uses as a writer. It's a very good mechanism. But that isn't why I'm using it. How do you suppose you'd solve engrams on the basis of a stable datum? How do you suppose you'd do this? Could you solve all the n-grams out of the bank without ever running one? Be very interesting, wouldn't it, to do this? Now, I've just told you a method by which we could go on and probably get a data clear. With considerable ease. He'd be quite a smart cookie, by the way. He wouldn't have any big confusions. He never did really get any individual auditing, but he did have the chance of inspecting and integrating the data with his own livingness. See, he did have that chance merely by finding out which datum in Scientology could work along with what he already knew. Now, that would give you a data clear. Now, I wonder if a comparable system could be used with regard to the engram. Remember, an engram is a very beefy thing. Very, very tough to most people. It's tough to some, and it's not tough to others. But we have... In the engram, just as in the field of pain itself, a terrific difference of opinion. Now, difference of opinion in the engram is as wide as engram comes into re-stimulation, the person, lock, stock, and barrel, regresses back on the track, winds up into the engram totally and entirely, and does not escape from it in any way whatsoever. He is at once in another life, another beingness. See that? He's returning to present time, and he doesn't remember that he's run the engram. Do you know that engram can have that much of an effect? All right? An engram could have a worse effect than that. It could simply wind the individual up where it is and be so totally effective upon him that he would be the total engram. He would simply go right on being nothing but the engram. And mechanically, this could be an explanation of insanity. An individual gets wound up in an insane engram, and the engram has overcome him, and he is now the engram, and where's he? Well, it's the question of the thetan and the theta trap. We run on somebody who's having a rough time exteriorizing, be a theta trap, be a thetan, be a theta trap, be a thetan. And first thing you know, he goes through the horriblest feelings of degradation you ever wanted to... watch in anyone, because the thetan is way, 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 way below death. And he is being the trap, you see? The preclear was living as the trap. It didn't even suspect there was a thetan in there with him. See, he's entirely out of the idea of being the thetan, so he didn't even suspect the thetan. He begins to suspect the thetan. He'll tell you, you know, I think there's a thetan in here too. You know, there's some living thing in here. And then was asked, be the thetan, be the trap, be the thetan, be the trap. He comes up, and all of a sudden, through these terrific depths of degradation, may come in to a circumstance whereby he is himself, and the trap is a trap. Now, up to that time, he was the trap, wasn't he? Well, now, that's what you might call the total devourment of the individual by a picture, or an experience, or a series of pictures or experiences, see? He is totally devoured by these. Now, how would a Thetan get into a situation where he would be so totally devoured? He would get into that by having the consideration that he could. He should have the consideration then, or he would have the consideration in order to get himself into these remarkable circumstances, that he was incapable of withstanding or doing anything with or about the engram or the energy mass. And so we get immediately to intolerance of confusion. We arrive at once at this fact. It must be that he is intolerant of confusion, intolerant of confusion in time, intolerant of other confusions. Somehow or another, he must be so intolerant of it that he thinks the confusion is senior to himself. We got that now. Look that over. The individual who would be the trap, in addition or above being himself, must think then that the trap is senior to himself. Now, why is the trap senior to himself? Why is it? Because a confusion, such as the trap, must be greater than himself. It's just as simple as that. That's really all there is to it. The confusion has so often won that he believes it is a superior method of existence. See this? In other words, it's superior livingness. Being this confusion called a trap, or being this trap called a trap, is better livingness, more powerful livingness, than, according to his opinion, than being himself. That is never true. Never has been true, never will be true. But he thinks it's true. His intolerance for confusion, then, has become a desire not just for confusion, but to be confusion. Now, there is a further one than this. The individual has been a confusion and now decides to confuse others. And if you ever watch the activity of a psychotic, it will be just this, the dramatization of confusion in others. See, he wishes to create the confusion for others. Can you follow me? He not only is himself the victim of confusion, but he himself has become confusion, and then he can get worse than that. He can then deal only with confusion. He becomes a confusion merchant. A merchant of chaos. We used to call him merchant of fear. Well, you can amplify that and make it just a little bit rougher. You can say he's a merchant of confusion. Confusion could be any kind of emotional interaction or reaction. Do you know that this can get so bad that we could take an entire nation and have it desire to give the rest of the world only confusion? See, it could get that bad. And we have had instances of this time and time again. Just wants to throw the rest of the world in confusion. They say conquer. They don't know what they're talking about. They just want everything confused. Now, I've had young men in offices and on board ships that thought about their finest possible activity could be going through a department and making everything in it confused. They excuse this by saying, we're getting it all into action. We're making it look more alive. They just tear everything up and throw it away and mess everything up and get everybody all upset and contradict themselves one way or the other and give a whole series of orders and then check that with a whole other series of orders and then say, well, they're looking at the place, making the place look more alive. Oh, no, they're not. They're nuts when they do that. Ding, ding, ding. Cell 13. This is real nutty. Yet you probably have known people like that who passed for sane people. Now, if we want to see the mechanism of insanity result, we would simply debar them utterly from ever creating another confusion. See, we would just blunt them out on the subject. We would refuse to let them create a confusion. We would hold them in line with great duress. What would we do? We would back them into being the confusion all over again, wouldn't we? They were not the makers of confusion. They became the confusion. This is what would occur, and what has generally occurred with these young men. Because I didn't have time to sit there and process them, and I didn't want them tearing through the organization or the office or the ship or the bake shop or anything like this and suddenly just tearing up everybody's leave and liberty and enforcing this and giving a whole series of orders in case that. And I say, you go one go near that bake shop just one more time and interrupt those cooks. And I'm not going to have you with stripes. I'm going to have both your ears. And you can see the guy start to spin right in front of your eyes. He will. He evidently is dramatizing an engram, you see. And it is an engram of confusion. And you, by telling him he had to control the thing, made him recognize that he couldn't tolerate it. And it ate him up just like that. He could just actually spin right straight in. I've never seen one go all the way in just on a little incident like this. But he could spin all the way in, theoretically. That is the mechanical mechanism, the mechanical aspect of insanity. You got it? If you want any confirmation of this at all, we have two series of phenomena in progress. One is the considerations, data, alignment, and so forth. That's one series of considerations, you see. And we have this other mechanical material, such as the reaction of the engram, and this we're really talking about now. Okay. What happened to him? He was able to put this out on others, but in that wise, he could apply it in some fashion, or he could use this engram. People had made him confused in the past. Now, on an overt act motivator sequence, he felt himself perfectly entitled to make everybody else confused. Understand, no matter what he said, well, I'm really doing this for their good, or I'm doing this to produce more efficiency, or I'm doing this to put them on the ball, or yap, 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 see? Whatever he said he was doing, what he was really doing was dramatizing an engram of confusion. And when you made it no longer possible for him to cause this much confusion, he, ordinarily, could be expected to get et up by the engram. Unless you gave him, along with it, the other system, a better datum. Can you follow me now? See? Then we could actually smash this engram right back in his teeth, see? As long as it carried with it a stabilizing, reorganizing datum. We would have to give him a better method of doing things to people in order to cause him to be alert and happy about living in the midst of that engram. We didn't have to rationalize the confusion itself or do anything, but we had to improve his ability somehow or another. We had to let him as is or work out or take care of a lot of randomity in his own sphere. We had to give him a direction. We had to give him a cause, a goal, or something. We had to get him to change his place on the track to some degree. We had to get him to reorganize his activities to some degree before we would get a change in his conduct. Without then reorganizing his activities in any way, shape, or form, we simply smash this confusion back on him again and say, you cannot dramatize this. We're not going to permit you to dramatize this any longer. We would simply watch the guy spin. Bing. What we've got to do is give him a new direction for action. We've got to let him help people or do things for people, or we've got to let him react toward the environment now, and we've got to give him a better reason for doing so, and if we wanted to really be optimum, we would have to give him a datum that would orient a bunch of the data he had. And if we did all these things, we would have done what? We would have effectively processed him so that he wasn't bound and determined to dramatize the confusion. And if we did all these things, and by the way, don't try to make long lists of them, all we did very simply was bring a better organization of life into his existence, a better order in some fashion. We gave him the engram, to compensate for it, we brought a better order into his life, either by giving him a new datum or by giving him a new direction, some new goals, something of the sort. We say, there's no need to go on knocking the bake shop to pieces. The real trouble on the whole line is the insufficiency of personnel up in the personnel office. Now, this is the shabbiest way of going about it. The inefficiency of the personnel officer in the cooks and bakers that they send us. And that personnel office. Now, if you want to raise hell with somebody, why don't you go to the personnel office? And you stop raising hell inside the ship and start raising hell outside the ship, see? That's a sort of a shabby way of going about it, but in a moment of emergency, you can patch it up that way. You can transfer the area of confusion. Now, if he's the kind of a guy that's going to do this, the oddity is you would be put on a very astonished frame of mind to see how fast he will transfer the direction of the confusion or the new area of confusion. He's almost in trance. He's almost in trance. You say to him, transfer area of confusion. He transfer then their area of confusion. Bing. See? He does it with great ease. Because you start speaking to him about anything bordering on this confusion, and you find this individual hypnotically inclined. He's under your control or anybody's control. He's not in good shape if he's doing this. It's very easy for you to direct him around. One of the oddities is if you wake him up a little bit by giving him a new goal or a new datum, let him reorient or reorganize his existence a little bit better. Well, what do we find? We find we have made him a little saner. We have made him proof against the confusion just to this degree by bringing in new order into his life. Now, the funny part of it is there's an entirely new sphere of action occurs here. We bring the individual himself not into a better order. We don't bring him better order or better organization. This is another method now, you see. We don't bring him better order or better organization. We bring him, very bluntly, a better tolerance of confusion itself. And when his tolerance of confusion is sufficiently taken care of, when he himself can tolerate confusion, he will drop that engram. The engram at that moment is not the winning valence. He himself is, because he himself can now handle confusion. Now, do you see these things as two different things? One is order the guy's data. In other words, give him less confusion to match his, you might say, quote, very improperly, native tolerance, unquote, for confusion. See? You give him more orderly data, therefore the individual is less confused, although he himself is just as susceptible to confusion as ever. A new situation comes along which is just the same, and he spins, see? Or we can do this great oddity, see? Simply improve his tolerance for confusion itself. And he comes right off of this kick. He no longer goes down to the bake shop. He no longer tears everything up. He no longer has any impulse to go up to the personnel office and do this and that. He can do other things concerning confusion. See, he can handle it. He can do something about it. Therefore, the sight of confusion in his vicinity doesn't make him make it more confused. In other words, he stops being a confusion merchant. He stops buying and selling confusion as his sole activity in existence. There are a lot of other games. And he can make confusion or unmake it, or at will, only because of one thing. He has come to tolerate confusion a little better. Now, if we look at this, that his tolerance of confusion can be altered, then once more, we are actually handling the mechanical aspect of the engram bank. Because believe me, it's there for just two reasons. And one of them is confusion, and the other one is stillness. The complete antipathy of confusion. Stillness could be characterized on its highest echelon as no game. Confusion is too much game. Optimum game lies somewhere between stillness and confusion. But an utter stillness or an utter motionlessness, a complete, continuous stationariness, is as intolerable as too fast confusion. So what do you know? The individual would have to be improved on another thing if he was going to be in his optimum game band, wouldn't he? He'd have to be able to tolerate complete motionlessness better, and he'd be able to tolerate tremendous confusion better. And if he tolerated both of them, then he himself could handle a game in between. If he cannot tolerate motionlessness, he will fixate on it. I just talked to you about confusion. Do you see, then, that complete motionlessness of objects and locations and spaces and so forth could do the same thing? The individual has too much confusion. Confusion then has mastered him. He is now in hectic, agitated motion, or he is bringing hectic, agitated motion to his vicinity. This is not a game. With him, he is simply dramatizing. No choice exists, and choice must continue to exist in all games. Therefore, the same principles can occur in motionlessness. The individual has too little motion, and this too little motion can cause him to fixate on too little motion. And having too little motion, he now will interiorize into it and become it. And become motionless. And we have the fellow, the extreme case is the catatonic skits. But we have the fellow who just sits around and says someday he's going to get around to it. We have all kinds of things. We're liable to make mistakes about both of these. On one side of it, we have the, as a public, you know, we're liable to make vast mistakes on both these. We have this fellow who's tearing around and getting this done and getting that done and killing that confusion and doing this and doing that and doing that and the boy's motion. And we say, there's a go-getter. There's a young man who's really got to show on the road. Nuts. All right. Now let's take this motionless fellow and we say, well, he's a very conservative fellow. He is very thoughtful. He thinks things over very carefully before he does them. He is a solid character. Nuts. The public makes these two mistakes continually so that you see this log sitting at the desk in the bank manager's office. It's just a log. And you walk in and you say, log? Give me permission to do this and that. And log doesn't say. He says, well, I have to think this over. I have to remain motionless. I have to stay still. You get the idea? That's all he's saying to you. You have to stay still. You mustn't move around. You mustn't put anything through. And we sometimes interpret this as everything must stop. But everything must stop is not as bad off as this fellow is. That's 1-5. This fellow can still deal in a bit of confusion. He can still deal in a bit of motionlessness, you know. And he can still exert some power of choice as to who he kills when. You know, he's still got that sort of choice. But not this motionless fellow. He actually is in a trance. And if we see these fellows spotted around through governments and industries and so forth. And the industry doesn't know something very interesting. Just as I told you that the young or old man who is in this terrific agitation isn't necessarily just young men that are in this agitation. I've seen old women in this agitation, the like of which you never saw. Flutter, flutter, flap, 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 flap. Spin, 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 spin. Wipe your nose, put on your hat, take off your rubbers. And you say, but you just wiped my nose. I have no hat on. And, I haven't had any rubbers for a month. It doesn't make a bit of difference. Doesn't make a bit of difference, you know. And then there's the person who just sits and looks at the newspaper. The kid drives the kid nuts, too. Just sits and looks at the newspaper. Both of these people are hypnotically governable. You can handle either of them. If a bank had in any of its director's posts, a log. They don't realize it, but they have a fellow, if he had the authority, as he usually would have, because he's so conservative and therefore safe. He never does anything, so therefore no wrong action ever occurs in his vicinity. He's always thinking it over. Something of sort. If he had the power to write a 100,000-pound check or transfer $1 billion in gold or something of the sort, this man is the complete victim. He is right straight at the mercy of anybody who knows hypnosis. Because the guy's in a trance. Such people are very commonly garbed in authority. And they're very commonly garbed in conservatism. But this is your reactionary gone completely sour. This is your super conservative. His activities are so hypnotically inclined, his power of choice is so small and so narrow, that people will sit around in the society and think there's a plot on from powers on high to actively do in things. You know, there's no plot on. We look at the heads of certain committees or something like that scattered around the world doing this or that, and we think these people must be acting directly in the direction of some mysterious movement. There must be somebody around giving them orders to cause the demise of nations. I've even heard it said this for centuries. There's been this myth of the international clique, you know, that really handle all the countries from afar and so on. It's this guy. See? It's this guy. Because he's really on a succumb level, just as the super agitated person is on the succumb level. See? And he makes any decision he makes. If he's really pressed to make a decision, he'll get even with you by giving you a death decision. So their decisions are death decisions. And we have large institutions surviving only because they themselves are too hard to push around. See? But they do succumb on a slow decline. Now, these are then two interesting fellows. The oddity is they happen to fit themselves into two political spheres. Two different political spheres. But I don't know why they should fit themselves into two political spheres, because the oddity is that they're both crazy. The extreme rightist and the extreme leftist are usually, on the rightist side, a log. When you get this extreme case, non-rational, going to hold us to this call, that's the way it is. We'll always be here. Nobody need make a decision, see? And this other fellow way over on the leftist side is going, tear it all up, confuse industry, strike, do this, do that. The funny part of it is you'd no more get a new government in that was flying the flag that he was okaying before than he would say, down with that flag, now we got to tear up this, you know? To let either of these boys have very much control is a severe mistake on the part of a nation. Because neither of them will keep a game going. Both of them to the opposite poles of the game. Now, there are two different fixations, but the same mechanical fact is true. It just happens that one of them is fixed on a motionless one, and another one is fixed on a moving one, an engram. It just is by almost luck which one is in restimulation. Now, one who was raised in a rather motionless environment will, of course, if he's already got a low tolerance for motionlessness, and motion, too. They have low tolerances for both at the same time. He just happened to have more locks which were motionless, and so he became more fixed on motionlessness. And this other fellow happened to be in a more agitated atmosphere just by a fluke, and so he's got more fixation. He's got more locks, you might say, on his confusion. And locks on the confusion, so he fixes on that series of engrams. They just fix on whatever seems to be the most of. If the most thing there is around is confusion, they get fixed on, interiorized into, and start to cause confusion in varying degrees. And if the mostest that is around is motionlessness, then they'll get the mostest fixed on motionlessness. See? You look at this and you say, oh my, an ion banging around inside of a tube, a marble shaken up in a box, a dye in a cup. These things are highly determined organisms. Compared to the all-out, flat-out thing. Because nobody expects the dye in the cup to do anything but bounce around. But we expect these two cases on opposite sides of the spectrum, on the one hand, to actually accomplish something by motionlessness, and on the other hand, to accomplish something by motion. We don't expect the dye to do anything, but these two cases have upset our expectancy or our prediction, which is an important thing. Our rightness depends on how accurately and we predict, you see. And they have upset our rightness. We expect these people to do something. So we were always outraged about capital and labor. We were always saying to ourselves, oh, gee whiz, now we're in the middle of a depression. Now what do we do? Or now it's a big strike. I'm not getting to work on time. Or, you know, individually and personally, we get mixed up with these people, whether we like it or not. They're in the society. We start falling across the log. The darndest thing. Here is this super motion trying to make a contract with no motion. and neither one of them with a power of choice, don't you see? And you come along, perfectly able to play a game, and find out that all the lines of the game are all wound up in a ball. It's a mess. See? All right. Now, we could run out all these motionless n-grams out of a log, or we could run out a lot of motion n-grams out of the agitator. One or the other, see? We could do either one of these things. And change his power of action, or change his conduct. But we wouldn't have changed his mind. We wouldn't have improved the log's tolerance for motionlessness, particularly. And we wouldn't have particularly improved the agitator's tolerance for motion. See, neither one would we have improved. But we would have improved simply their surface conduct. Now, it may be that as they handle a motionless engram, or two, they see they can handle motionlessness, and so they change their minds. But unless you know that datum is there, it sometimes doesn't occur, leaving you high and dry. They've never changed their minds about their ability to handle that motionlessness, see? Never changed their minds about it. They just simply handle it, and their conduct is better, and they don't know they're any better, and you get confused as an auditor because you know the guy is better, you know his conduct's better. No, but what's better? What's better is the material he's handling all the time. That's the lump in his hand, so to speak. That's what's better. When you didn't improve his consideration, he won't say he's better either, because basically the thing that's wrong with him, his inability to change his consideration about motion or motionlessness, is not bettered. And not having changed that ability, or his ability to consider it all, we, of course, then don't get a result satisfactory to ourselves. So we must look carefully at this fact that we're working with these two things. Tolerance for, and the picture of. See, we're working with two things. We could handle picture of without getting any increased tolerance for. And there the individual's behavior would be better, but he wouldn't be any more able, really, as a person at all. He'd hit another agitation, and away he'd go. Now, this is the lady that you process, and she's just fine while she's being audited by you, and you've flattened a lot kickback engrams, and she goes home into the same environment again and spins all over again. See? This is that person. Couldn't tolerate the environment. Then that means that raising or changing her tolerance for motion or motionlessness, either one, has not been accomplished. Well, this is the spook factor in auditing. This is the upsetting factor. This is the factor which must be changed if you're going to succeed with the session. The ability to increase tolerance. We've got to change his mind. He has to be able to change his mind. You get the idea? Now, we can force a man to change his mind by holding a gun on him, but we haven't improved his ability to change his mind. See the difference between those two points. So an individual could change his mind as energy ran through and so forth and not really be any better. But he'll explain this on a kind of halfway get the idea, you know. There'd be no spark or flash there at all. He'll just kind of halfway get the idea about the whole thing, you know. He really doesn't cognite at all. He just kind of knows a little bit better. And sometimes he will tell you this. And you should know what's going on. The individual's ability to change his mind is not improving. The person's mind is changing. You get the idea? Well, now, you could have him change his mind, but if you didn't improve his ability to change his mind, then somebody else can come along and change his mind back again, too. And again, you haven't won. So no matter whether the n-gram is one of motionlessness or one of motion, or whether the n-gram is one or a billion, in either case, we must improve the individual's ability to consider motionlessness or motion. On a higher gradient, motionlessness becomes not knowingness. On a higher gradient, motion to much becomes don't knowness or not knowness. In either case, we have an unknownness above two levels. So that we also have to improve his consideration not only about confusion and motionlessness, but a little bit higher, since both of these factors of motion and motionlessness add up to a higher echelon of one factor, not knowingness. We have to improve his ability to consider stupidity. And unless we improve his ability to tolerate stupidity, unless we improve or enlarge his tolerance of stupidity, or unless we improve his ability to create stupidity and do other things with stupidity, we, again, will have a limited result. We let the individual change his mind back and forth on the subject of toleration of motionlessness. Not only that, but he got into a position, finally, where he himself could make up his own mind. He could make up his own mind. All right, this fellow over here who is utterly good, we still got him so that he could change it. We were changing his mind on the subject. And finally, he got so he could change his mind on the subject of motionlessness. Both of these guys are now in a situation where they both have to be able to change their mind on stupidity. And what do you know? Tolerance of brightness and tolerance of stupidity are both, to a marked degree, tolerance of not knowness. You got it? Gradient scale. A lot of people are antipathetic to somebody who is bright. People get antipathetic toward somebody who is bright. They're upset. They feel they have to have just so much not knownness. And this guy is liable to do something horrible to it. Not knownness is not in their power of control. All you have to do is put not knownness in their power of control, and they change their minds on brightness and stupidity both. Well, this is interesting then. But the oddity is that it doesn't automatically occur that an individual will change his mind or raise or have an increased tolerance of, change his mind about or have an increased tolerance of motionlessness or motion just because you've changed his mind about not knowingness. Got that? So actually, there's three things here we have to restore his ability about. We have to restore his ability about. He has to be able to handle motionlessness, motion, and not knowingness. And he has to handle these three things. If he doesn't handle those things, well, you haven't brought him up. So your processing should be in the direction of bringing about an ability to handle those things. Why does he want to handle them at all? Because he wants communication. Communication is his pay. What if you gave him every avenue open to increase his ability to tolerate motionlessness, to tolerate motion, to tolerate not knowingness, and my, he just got into the most wonderful tolerant state of mind, and got able about the whole thing, and he could press on down the line toward various goals, you know, and he just got along fine, and he didn't seem to be much better as a case. He just kind of told you his tolerances were this way, but it didn't seem to be much better as a case, and he relapses rather rapidly. What's wrong? This law is at work. An individual will not raise his communication above a level that he can trust to be communication. It's a sneaky little law. He will not raise his level of communication above the level that he can trust communication to exist. He's sitting with a solid iron hat on, as far as you're concerned. If he doesn't trust that a higher level of communication can exist, more terminals, better intentions, and all that sort of thing. If he doesn't trust that these things can exist, he won't go toward them. Sounds absolutely fantastic. It sounds like now that we could increase his tolerance, you know, of motionlessness, increase his tolerance of motion, increase his tolerance of stupidity, and still have a guy the same as before. It's what it sounds like, because this last one sounds terrible. It's horrible. because it says Willie can't go swimming till he learns how. One of these dead-end streets, no-through street. If you go up, you're going to come down again. If you put him up into a level of communication that he suddenly believes is not a level of communication, he will come down to his old level of communication. If we were to clear this man and turn him out into society and he discovered that fewer people were talking to him and he was making less money and all that sort of thing, he'd cut his tolerances right on down. He'd get problems all over again. Do all kinds of things. What's he doing? He's really not trying to have problems. He's not trying to do this and that. He's just trying to get into better communication with the society. So we must raise his ability to communicate commensurate with his tolerance. We're raising his tolerance on three fronts. If we raise his tolerance on those three fronts, his betterment will be temporary. His tolerance on those three fronts is dependent upon his security of communication, his surety of communication, his certainty that communication will exist. And he won't raise his communication above a level that he feels is communication. You find him departing hints and, nah-uh, less communication. They processed me, and here I am, and practically nobody talking to me at all. Well, we didn't raise his ARC on his third dynamic then, did we? It's a very unfortunate thing that if you process an individual today without increasing his abilities on the third dynamic, he won't stay processed. He's got to be in better communication, that's all there is to it. Well, he wouldn't be in better communication if he had the same R and the same A, would he? If he had the same level of affinity and reality as before, and we, is what's wrong with this statement, and we just improved his communication. Something wrong with that statement, isn't it? Can't do it. If you really improve his communication, you will improve his affinity and reality. Now, affinity and reality don't improve to any great extent, processed as themselves. They improve on the basis of improved communication. But A and R, in terms of consequences, can do this interesting thing. They can make communication hang up on occasion. Communication would be there totally if it weren't for A and R. It's almost as if A and R are the constrictive points of the triangle and communication is the expansive side of the triangle. There's a slightly different behavior pattern here, isn't there? Slightly different behavior pattern. Well, if A and R are the restrictive sides of the triangle, what is R? R is the terminal of communication. It is massive or not massive, as the case may be. Therefore, we'll have to study the gradient scale of terminals in order to increase the man's communication. We look over the terminals. What is as low as you will get to process? To be in any communication at all, the individual has to be able to be in contact with energy sources. That's as low as you can get, see? He has to at least have some idea that energy sources can exist. He's either creating it or he's getting it. And so the lowest, quote, terminal, unquote, is energy sources. That's the lowest terminal. Now, an individual can have a reality on energy sources without having a reality on terminals. So a person who has no reality on terminals can have good and ample reality on energy sources. So that's the bottom of R, as far as we're concerned, at this time. That's the bottom of R. The bottom of R is energy sources. Now, it'd be unfair not to accompany it just to the brief statement of how you'd handle that. You could have the individual find energy sources objectively. You could have him scout them in the environment through which you are walking with him as auditor and preclearing, having spot these energy sources. And he would increase his reality on these sources simply by finding out that they existed, and he could go ahead and spot them. Now, on the next level of processing on the same thing, we could do it on mock-ups. We could have him mock up energy sources of one kind or another, you see? And mocking up the energy source, he will eventually get into terminals. We run a gradient scale from the energy source to the terminal. He at first looks on all terminals only as energy sources. The terminals are not anything for themselves. They are simply energy sources. They have a purpose. They have a significance. All terminals have the significance of furnishing energy one way or the other. They are good terminals or bad terminals to the degree they furnish energy. This tells you this individual is awfully starved for energy if he has this consideration. All right. So we increase or improve by whatever means his tolerance of or reality on energy sources. The next step up on reality is the terminal. The terminal itself. It is a terminal. Now, a terminal can be a terminal for its aesthetic value. It can be a terminal for its, you see, an aesthetic value is also a communication. You have to communicate with something to realize that it has an aesthetic value, or you say you do at least. It would have a value for its stability, one would say, or its amusingness, or it could have a number of values, you see. But the center of all these values, is it real? Whether aesthetic or otherwise, is it real? Does it exist? The oddity is that an individual too low on this line does not feel that it exists. And that's why he's into power sources. Of course, below that, he probably feels power doesn't exist either. But we won't bother with that. Right there on terminals. Terminals are, they're on gradients. Some terminals exist and some don't. Now, that is a hopeful look. You can take the fellow who is fixed on energy sources only, apparently, and you'll find at least one or two terminals. He will be interpreting these, however, differently. He won't speak of these or think of these as terminals. He'll speak and think of them as things you get energy from. Now, the reality of the terminal itself, then, can have many values, many reasons, but, of course, the basic reason is communication. So how good is it as a communication terminal? He talks to it, and it talks to him. See, how good is the terminal? Now, he will spot in the environment terminals. Now, these are best as communication terminals when they're spotted. The variant reality on things depends on the realness with which he can feel that they are useful in communication. So we have, we spot people. We spot objects, we spot people. Somebody's liable to start spotting a communication terminal as a telephone, radio, so on. Nearly all of our communication terminals these days that are most reliable, we feel, are six dynamic terminals. All right. He spots real terminals, terminals that are real to him, and he keeps spotting these until he gets a greater reality on terminals. And that would be your second level. Now, the third level is recovering the ability to announce one's presence without the use of mass, really, or distance. The ability to announce one's presence without the use of mass. In other words, terminal by postulate, reality by postulate, reality of terminal by postulate. You see? He says, I'm here. That's good enough for everybody. I'm here, I'm talking. That's good enough. He'd have to feel that that was communication. He'd have to feel that communication was possible at this unthinkable height before he would be willing to abandon a body entirely and become an operating Thetan. And the recovery of the ability of operating Thetan would be communication terminal by postulate. By definition, he would have to be able to do this. Terminal without mass. And what do you know? There's a level 2.5, which is below terminal by postulate and above the standard type mass terminal, mass universe style. There's one in between that is highly theoretical, probably completely impossible. It may not be demonstrable, may not exist in fact, may never be accomplishable at all, but every Thetan seems to believe that it is. And that is terminal by mock-up. Now, we know mock-ups is a subjective phenomenon. We know it's subjective. We mock things up in our own bank, so to speak. Well, this level 2.5, you understand, it's power source is number one, terminals, reality level is terminals. You can say his reality level is power source. His reality level is terminals. That's number two. And 2.5, with 3 up here being terminal by postulate, would be terminal by objective mock-up. We'd simply mock a terminal up, and it would talk, and it would listen. And when we were through the conversation, we would unmock it. I say it's terrifically theoretical. Every Thetan seems to believe it's possible, though. You start processing somebody, and after a little while, he says, he feels funny. It's so bright to him, you ought to see it, too. Well, it couldn't possibly be that bright, or you would see it, you see. But he feels disappointed or upset. And it's so easy to invalidate his reality on the mock-up, and it makes him feel so bad that one suspects that this is probably the very best method. One suspects that this is optimum. You have the aesthetic of a visible terminal. You have the destructibility and an indestructibility, the appearance and disappearance of it, entirely under your control. You can have it affected or not affected at will. You can make it cause or not cause at will without any liability. You can have communication. But man, would an individual's reality on this have to be good? And would other people's reality on it have to be good? See, other people's reality on it would have to be good. Otherwise, it wouldn't be a good communication terminal, which is what blows it up. But remember this, then, that there is a level 2.5, which is a theoretical level, in which at this time we don't much care about. Although we process straight at it with creative processing. We don't care whether we ever attain this level, but we're just going to process in this direction. When we do subjective mock-ups of communication terminals, we're processing toward level 2.5, not level 3. We're not processing toward terminal by postulate. You know, the individual says, I'm here, there's no mass. You know, we're not processing in that direction. We're processing toward level 2.5. Evidently, the individual assumes that if he can make up enough mock-ups and square them all up, well, eventually he will get good enough in making mock-ups that he will simply say, communication terminal, start talking. All right, stop talking. Start talking. Look, I got communication going on. So creative processing goes up toward level 2.5, which must be there theoretically. By theory, it must be there. We're processing toward it. So you mustn't neglect its existence. And you mustn't foist off on the preclear that it exists. Because if he fails, you've got the worst invalidation you could hand him. And if it isn't possible at all, you have given people a, quote, ability, unquote, which they will never be able to accomplish, and have pegged them on the time track with a big failure. See? That's the nastiest trick of this universe, is to insist people can do something which they can't do. Insist they can do something, that this something is being done, and they themselves can't do it. Now, this is so flagrant as a trick that when you tell somebody that he should be able to accomplish a certain result and he doesn't accomplish it, he thinks you're pulling this trick on him. He's very likely to blame this. He said, well, it's not an accomplishable result. Might be a very simple result. Little kid, you tell him to put his scooter in the garage or something of the sort, and he can't do it. And he'll come back in, he'll think you've tricked him. He'll have a betrayed look on his face. It's easy to put the scooter in the garage, but he hasn't been able to do it. But so then he immediately assumes that you've tricked him. You have given him this trick. You have told him something was accomplishable in this universe, which isn't accomplishable. And therefore, you knew, knowingly, maliciously, that you were perpetrating a trick upon him. So that level 2.5 is an important one from the standpoint of, don't you start giving people the idea that this is an accomplishable result. Because were they to fail in that result, were they never to achieve it in any way, shape, or form, they would really crash. You got the idea? And we do not, frankly, we do not know whether or not this is an accomplishable result. There's just no data on it, as far as I'm concerned, from me to thee. Okay. Therefore, the remedy of terminals is the remedy of reality. A is the particle flow, evidently. And the first particle at the lowest level is heavy mist energy. And as we come upscale, we get lighter and lighter varieties of energy until we get up to high levels of affinity. It's by postulate. Particles by postulate. See, we had no particles there. Communication, no, there's a higher level than that. Communication without particles. Which would use, of course, a terminal by postulate. It would be a total sort of communication, wouldn't it? Be a nice thing to adjust. But on the reality band below that, we would assume that some particles would be employed at level 2.5. Particles by mock-up, objective mock-up. So the affinity at that level would be by objective mock-up. Now the oddity is we get higher and higher and tinier, rather, wavelengths as we go up that affinity line. We start out with practically no wavelength at all, just chunk. See, if a cannonball sitting still, pardon me, worse than that, if a rock sitting still has a wavelength, then the bottom of the A scale has a wavelength, you see. We go right on up the line to the top. Now, you see how these three things then interassociate. We've got the interchange of ideas, and we've got the R corner, which is the contest of the terminals, and we've got the A corner, which is more or less the particle. Now, the A and R corner, though, are not a total statement. They require the consideration of existence, both of them. The A corner is the consideration of distances. There are a lot of other things, odds and ends, in the A corner and the R corner, which are there, but which we don't need to consider at this time, so far as I know, in order to accomplish a rise in the triangle of ARC. But we do need to consider, to some degree, the particle itself on the A corner. We do need, to some degree, to consider the terminal on the R corner, in order to bring up the individual's reality and affinity for. You see, we're bringing up his reality on and his liking for C, communication. And we have made a clean statement of it when we have done this. And if we've done that, well, we've raised his ARC. And we had to do that. He had to really get communication by doing that. And he had to really find out that his communication with his environment was better. The oddity is that the parts of the communication formula itself are all that need to be processed. His affinity kind of takes care of itself and so forth. But you have to look this over and you have to know what you're doing with this. So we have to raise his tolerance for motion, his tolerance for motionlessness, and his tolerance for not knowingness. And we have to raise his trust level of, is it a communication? Am I in communication? We have to give him more communication, not less, in order to make him get better. And on the one side, we have the basic considerations. We think these are very fine. His tolerances make him easier to live with, change his personality and all that sort of thing. But the only pay he'll ever collect is communication. So he says to hell with all these tolerances if they don't bring him more communication that he can be sure is communication. You see that? So we have these tolerances over here depressing the communication to some degree. We have the communication depressing the tolerances, and we have to audit all these factors in order to get a pre-clear up the line. We have to handle it once, really, the mechanics
of banks and Phaetons and all the rest of it, and we have to handle considerations about these things. We have to handle tolerances, communication, and we get a clean sweep across the line. But the tolerances and the communication itself are the monitoring effects. And if you don't improve those, you don't improve the pre-clear. If you improve those, why, you do get your final result. Thank you.